this episode of Fictional Hangover, we talk about snot running down your face and into your mouth, creepy things inside holes in walls, impossible doors full of gross dead finger mouths, and meatballs in our discussion of Horror Store by Grady Hendrix. Hey everybody, welcome to season 3 of Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series, authors, and voice actors that is full of spoilers. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire, and today we're going to discuss Horror Store by Grady Hendrix.
Standard disclaimer, if you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book. Then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up. Season 3! What?
I always get wrong for making those noises in the house. I'm very proud that I said Grady Hendrix first time, because every time I type his name, I always do the, like, Gradix. Oh, no, I always do Grady, not with a H, and I kind of mix his first name with his second name up, and I'm like, no, it's me. There's a little tidbit for you.
That is great.
You can edit that one out.
Should I?
Can you wield that power?
I do wield that power quite often. We say a bunch of random shit, Claire, that doesn't ever make it into the show.
99% of people only you.
Yeah. But they can. They can now.
Yes, especially if
they join our Patreon as bonus tier members. Bonus!
Ooh, tell me more.
We have a Patreon now. It's live. Now. And I'm so excited. We have several tiers that you can choose from, ranging from the $1, that's it, tier, where you just give us a dollar and we like you for it. Sounds great to me, I think. Then, after that,
is Yikes!
Yikes is the next tier. That's right.
$3?
$3 a month.
Mm-hmm. And that's our gratitude, which will be eternal and ever flowing. Plus, shout out on the show.
That is great. It could be a shout out on the show. It could be a shout out on social media. It could be a video shout out on social media. Whatever.
Acknowledgement.
Yes, we are acknowledging you. What's our next one? I feel like you should mention the next one. It's important.
The next tier is $5, and that's our eternal gratitude once more. Overflowing. Spurts out. Shout out anywhere. And then join us for a Would You Rather.
You didn't even mention the name of the tier. The tier is Would You Rather.
It's called Would You Rather. And that's $5.
That is fantastic. But finally, what got us to this conversation even to begin with? The bonus tier.
Exclamation point.
They all have exclamation points.
True.
For $15 a month, you will get our eternal gratitude, a shout out on the show or social media, a chance to join us for Would You Rather, and also you will get access to our exclusive Fictional Hangover Patreon page, where you can interact with us and we might do Ask Us Anythings. There will be videos from our recordings and other behind-the-scenes content, and also probably some other random things that we throw on there.
Yeah. Probably the stuff we send each other.
Probably. Probably.
A terrifying clown picture from today.
Yes. Yes, a picture of my fantastic new t-shirt that I got.
I'm very jealous.
Let's summon demons.
That's like a good night.
It's really good. So you should go and check that out. You should become a Patreon patron today.
At patreon.com/fictionalhangover.
I'm so shocked that that is the address. Patreon.com/fictionalhangover.
Coffee.com/fictionalhangover.
Fictionalhangover all over the place.
Except at Redbubble, when it's fictionalhangover.redbubble.com.
And on Twitter. Fictionalhangover.no.er. Yikes. Yikes. Yikes.
Well, that was an awkward advertisement for
it
Patreon.
It really, really was, but it's
and
fine.
And it's basically our way of asking you to support the show, which would be absolutely wonderful. And
yeah.
We'd be very, very grateful.
Yeah, we would. We would really appreciate it. But just know that we're never going to put anything of import behind a paywall. We're not going to take away any content from anyone.
Yeah, no. We're not going to be a podcast that puts bonus episodes behind the Patreon.
No, we don't believe in
it's
that.
It's not fair.
No. We don't believe in that. So we're not going to do it. We're just going to give you extra stuff.
Yeah.
And it's great.
It makes us laugh.
Yeah, we enjoy it. We enjoy it.
Oh, dear me.
Oh, my gosh. So, I found some background information for our fantastic author of our book we're discussing today. From his website, GradyHendrix.com, we learn that Grady Hendrix used to be a journalist, which means that he was completely irrelevant and could be killed and turned into food at any time. He is one of the founders of the New York Asian Film Festival, but he is not responsible for the bad parts of it. He is also not Asian. For years, he was a regular film critic for the New York Sun, but then it went out of business. He has written for Playboy Magazine, Slate, The Village Voice, The New York Post, Film Comment, and Variety. He has a hard time making up his mind. And if you enjoyed that small paragraph as much as Claire obviously did because she's crying, you should go and check out Grady Hendrix's website and everything else that he does because he's hilarious. That was just one paragraph from his About Me, and it gets better and also worse.
It's still it's been a long day. It's been a long year. But you know what? You know what? We are officially recording this in the month of Halloween.
We are. We are. Yay. So all of our books this month are going to be spooky.
Yes. Yes. Oh. 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 Yes.
Yes. Yes, indeed. They're quite fantastic.
They're not going to be to everybody's tastes because we know, you know, not everybody's a horror fan,
but
so
you should
far,
be.
I would definitely say give them a go. And actually, I will say give this one a go because it's really good. If you have ever been to IKEA, you have experienced some element of horror store.
Yes. If you've ever been to an IKEA, you can definitely relate to horror store. I went to IKEA last night.
I'm sorry? I feel
Why
like
are
I need
you
to
sorry?
Apologize. Because
Why?
IKEA is one of these places where you lose time.
You get lost and you walk around in circles and then there's a secret passageway to an underground prison? Wait.
No. Well, Wait. Possibly. Sometimes. Wait. It depends on the location. That would be awfully specific if it was every single one.
I'm not going to lie, we went to IKEA so I could take pictures for cosplay.
Did you get sucked into buying anything? What did you
Dinner.
Buy?
Dinner. Meatballs. Yes. And a cinnamon bun.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's all we bought, though. We didn't buy any furniture. We did take a lot of pictures, though.
Yeah, the last time I was in IKEA was a couple of weeks ago, and that was to buy my computer chair. Went there with a purpose, bought only what I needed. I'm one of these terrible IKEA customers who goes in through the exit if I can. If I know what I want, I'm terrible. I look on the website. If I know what I want, and I already know that is the it, I do not need to sit and try it or anything like that. I'm one of these terrible customers who goes in through the warehouse, finds the kiosk, gets the location with the number, and then goes and picks it up and leaves straight away. I know.
I can't believe you go in through the outdoor. Do you also wear a raspberry beret?
There may be an occasion.
Anyway.
What's your thoughts?
I want to say that my cousin told me about this book because she also likes horror stuff. She likes it quite a bit. We have a lot in common, she and I, my cousin Casey. So she suggested that I read this book, and then we decided we were going to cover it on the podcast because then also Aaron from Worcester Public Library also suggested it to us. So clearly everyone thinks it's great and everyone wants us to read it and talk about it, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Thank you, Erin. You recommended it, and for me, anyway. And as soon as you recommended it, I knew I had to read it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So should we start?
Yeah.
Welcome to Orsk. Orsk is open 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Orsk promises a better life for everyone and can sell you everything you need. Except coffins. Yet. Orsk is the all-American furniture superstore in Scandinavian drag. Orsk is not affiliated with any other well-known flat-pack furniture superstore.
The Cuyahoga Orsk store is suffering from some technical glitches. The employee entrance won't open, so all the Orsk workers, co-partners, have to file in through the customer entrance, where the escalator is going the wrong way. Weird. Basil, the deputy manager, is trying to wrangle the masses and get everything working as well as can be. Amy is trying to avoid him, convinced she is first in the line of people to be fired because of the store's poor sales performance. Amy's plan is to avoid Basil until her transfer to another store comes through. If you can't see her, you can't fire her. Oh, bless. Bless my sweet summer child. So Amy dashes through the warehouse past someone who looks like a customer, which is strange because the store isn't open yet, and up to her showroom station where, unfortunately for her, Basil is waiting with a bunch of trainees. And then her phone goes off. Super! It's another one of the odd help texts from unknown number that a few of the store employees have been getting lately. But that doesn't matter because Basil loudly tells her her phone should be in the locker and it's time to give the trainees their tour.
While Amy is leading the tour, we meet Matt, who is moving a very smelly, very soiled sofa off the showroom floor. Oh, the joys of Orsk! The sofa soiling is not an infrequent occurrence, as people in public are disgusting and apparently like to leave dirty diapers everywhere. This smell is a bit stronger than something a bundle of joy would push out, however. We also meet Trinity, one of those super happy people who dresses like a rebel. A super expensive rebel who asks Amy if she believes in ghosts, which is not really all that unusual coming from Trinity. She's quirky. After asking about ghosts, Trinity tells Amy that Basil needs to see her in the motivation room for closed door coaching. Well, shit, here it comes, the firing.
Already inside the motivation room is Ruth Ann, the kindest, sweetest, best member of staff, putting on some chapstick. She is the one who remembers birthdays, kids' names, and anniversaries. Things must be serious if Ruth Ann is there too. Amy works through the 12 stages of grief pretty quickly and comes right back to indignation when Basil walks in. Protesting against Ruth Ann's firing, Amy pleads with Basil, but is surprised when Basil says no one is being fired. The store has a problem and he has a weird request to make. He wants the three of them to stay in the store overnight, and look for the person or persons who are vandalising it. The losses have had to be reported to corporate because they are way above budget, and corporate is sending a consultation team to the store. Dun, dun, dun. Basil wants the three of them to camp out and take turns trying to capture the culprit. When Amy seems reluctant, Basil informs her that she'll get double overtime and he'll push through her transfer request. She has financial problems and is desperate to work at a different store, so she's in. Ruthann is just happy to help.
When her regular shift is over, Amy spends some time driving around, then decides to sleep for a bit in her car in a Red Lobster parking lot. She's fallen behind on rent and desperately needs this overtime payment so her roommates won't kick her out. She decides it's better to not go home until she has this money. Amy managed to escape the trailer park of her youth, but everything is so hard and relentless. She longs to have what she calls a sitting job, something like a corporate ORSC job in an office with a desk. She definitely does not want to end up working retail forever. But you know, she really doesn't have to worry about that. Why? Because tonight will be her last shift. Ominous!
Oh.
Oh.
Oh my goodness. Basil, won't shut the fuck up! He keeps asking Amy all these super annoying corporate questions and quoting from memory parts of the founder Tom Larson's memoir.
It's the worst kind of manager.
It's the worst. Amy keeps escaping to the ladies' room after a particularly awkward conversation where Basil reveals he knows she took the shop responsible test, the test for management positions, and failed. Everyone said it was so easy to pass, so she didn't study, like, at all, and she failed. By 2 points, but she still failed. Embarrassed, she disappears back into the ladies' room for, like, the millionth time in the past hour, where she notices some new graffiti. It all follows the same pattern. A name. Under it, Beehive. And a time span. Closer to the door, there are more variations of the time span changing, getting bigger. Kit Bohr. Beehive, 2 years, scratch, 5 years. Carson Moore, Beehive, 3 years, scratch, 4 years, scratch, 5 years, scratch, 6 years, scratch, 7 years, scratch, forever.
Yikes. Ooh. Amy leaves the restroom and in the hall hears a slam. The place feels restless and like it is stirring. It's dangerous. Slam, click, slam. It's coming from downstairs. Slowly and quietly, Amy investigates. The employee entrance is open, and gum is stuffed inside the lock. Gross. Going back up to Basil and Ruthann, she tells them about the door. Basil goes to check it out, and Amy gets another help text. Ruthann turns her phone off in the store so she doesn't get them. And because she's a model employee. When Basil comes back, he tells them that he can get the door to close but not lock, and that the vandals must be inside the building. Amy tries to tell him about the graffiti, but he won't listen. Instead, he wants to split up and search. You do not split up. This is not Scooby-Doo. Stop it. Amateurs. Seriously.
Yes. Yeah.
Amy and Ruthann won't split up. Thank you very much, sensible females. So they will search the showroom together while Basil will take the market floor and warehouse.
The showroom is, it's creepy. It's creepy.
It's yikes.
Yeah. I mean, it's creepy during daylight hours. This is nighttime.
Yeah.
It's creepy.
Yikes.
And Ruthann is anxiously putting on more chapstick. She worked in the Youngstown store for 13 years with no problems. But Cuyahoga is strange. She once got lost for half an hour trying to find her friend. But it's a giant circle. How did she get lost? Since then, she has never again ventured out on the floor. Because it's so strange and Ruthann is practically vibrating with nerves, Amy starts to get anxious as well. They hear a metal scratching sound in the kitchen's area. And when they look into a sink, a big, fat, black rat is squeezing down the drain.
No.
The plumbing, it's not hooked up. So it scurries off behind a refrigerator and is gone. But you know what, though? Where there is one rat, there are more. Yeah. So they get the hell out of the kitchen's area. And while checking closets and bedrooms and finding nothing, Ruthann tells Amy about when she was young, she used to be scared of the creepy crawlies, shadows in the night. She thought that if she couldn't see them, then they wouldn't see her. Silly? Possibly.
Oh. As Amy and Ruthann pass through the mattresses, they see something strange, making them jump. But it's just Matt and Trinity. They hid in a wardrobe until after closing so they could carry out a paranormal investigation and sell it to a big-name TV production company. Hopefully Bravo, not A&E.
Stop mentioning A&E.
Their show will be awesome because they will actually get a shot of a ghost and maybe even interview one. It's called Ghost Bomb because there are ghosts and Matt and Trinity are the bomb. It turns out that they were the ones that put the gum in the employee entrance door so they could sneak out and collect all their ghost hunting equipment, and there is a lot of it. Matt tells Amy and Ruthann that the site used to have a prison on it back in the 19th century. Lots of nasty people died there, and their energy is probably still stored in the ground. Too many weird things are going on lately. And they are going to investigate it. Ghost bomb! Yeah! I'm just constantly thinking of ghost facers from Supernatural. Yeah. Yeah! Ghost bomb! Yeah!
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 I want a ghost bomb t-shirt now. Amy and Matt venture along the bright and shining path to put out EMF detectors. Matt doesn't think they'll pick anything up because of the vast amount of wiring in the open ceiling, but you never know. As they walk and talk, Matt reveals he doesn't really believe in ghosts, that what he saw when he was young could have been anything. But he and Trinity will make an awesome ghost hunting show because they are the bomb. It's just so awkward. Amy accuses him of lying to get into Trinity's pants. I mean, yeah. She also wonders if he was lying about there once being a prison on the site. That does turn out to be real. Cuyahoga Panopticon was a round prison with a guardhouse in the centre. The warden, Josiah Worth, was a total maniac.
That is putting it lightly.
Yeah, yeah. And now the song's in my head, thank you. He called the inmates penitents and had them constantly under surveillance. Under the cells were labyrinthine sub-basements where penitents work on mindless tasks to rewire their brains. Sound familiar?
A little bit, yeah. Except for I was only halfway paying attention because I was singing in my head. Yeah. And dancing.
It's stuck there now.
Okay.
But we can't sing anymore because otherwise we'll have to pay a bill.
Yeah. As they are talking, Amy and Matt get lost. What? How? The showroom floor is one big circle? Matt has been filming pickups as they've been walking and looks into the viewfinder to see that the camera shows them being in kitchens. But when they look around them in real life, they are in home office. That's weird. After a few more circuits, they decide to follow the camera screen and they slowly make it back to Trinity and Ruthann. Trinity is beyond excited by this and rushes off with Matt in the hopes of experiencing it for herself. Amy is anxious by the disorientation, so she and Ruthann head back to the break room.
Basil is not pleased that one, Amy and Ruthann took so long. Two, that Trinity and Matt are in the store. And three, that Trinity and Matt are recording Ghost Hunting Show. And most importantly, four, they are besmirching the good name of Orsk. As Basil is planning to go and fetch them, Trinity and Matt come running into the break room. They have caught a ghost on camera. Well,
ghost bomb!
Thanks! They have. Matt is convinced it's a person who rushed her. When they review the footage, Amy realises it's the same man she saw that morning who was clearly wearing white sneakers. Penitent Ghost wouldn't be wearing those.
No.
Basil now wants to go and find this person. Trinity says she's looking at him right now.
Yeah.
There on the TV is a security feed showing a leg, a white sneaker lying behind the sofa. And suddenly, the leg goes back. And everyone jumps.
Yikes.
How did the security feed go through the TV? That shouldn't happen. It was playing CNN and it's not hooked up. Trinity and Matt insist on coming to record the encounter, and so Basil can show corporate that he did everything properly, he allows them. Unwillingly, Amy heads out with them too.
As they pass the ladies' room, Basil asks about the graffiti. They head in to investigate. The walls are completely covered and the smell is overpowering. It's the same soiled sofa smell from earlier in the morning. There are more names and time spans and beehive scrawled all over the walls. It would take someone a long time to do this. Amy tells them it's a lot worse than it was before. Feeling sick, she wants to call the police, but Basil won't allow it. So she heads back to the break room with Ruthanne. Once there, Amy calls 911, but Ruthanne tells her to hang up. Ruthanne's whole demeanor changes as she lays into Amy, calling her a spoiled brat, telling her to grow up and suck it up because she needs this job. She's getting paid to deal with all this, and she should be grateful for it. It's too late, though. The cops are already on their way. But after that telling off, Amy and Ruthanne head out to join everyone else.
Basil and the others are in bedrooms and are convinced someone is hiding past the double doors, leading to the back of the store. Ruthanne at this point seems to be sick of all this, so she marches up to the doors and opens them to reveal no one. Obviously, the person has run off to another part of showroom. As one, they make their way to dining rooms, and as they walk the bright and shining path, a horrible smell hits them again, and they notice some of the chairs are on their side. Amy notices on the opposite side of bedroom display a hairy, manly hand with a gold ring sticking out from under a bed. Basil shouts out, but nothing. Again, Ruthanne steps up. She's clearly done with all this nonsense, very clearly. She lifts the bed. And there is a man.
Yikes.
His name is Carl, and he's homeless. Well, not really, because he lives in Orsk now, because it's space. He hides in the bathrooms, causing until everyone leaves. Then he comes out to the showroom. He begs them not to call the cops, and they all take a vote. That's the Orsk-mindedness way to do it. They vote in favour, not handing him over to the cops, which he is internally grateful for. Ruthanne points out that they are on their way regardless because Amy told them. So, whilst Basil waits outside for the police to arrive so he can turn them away and let Carl leave, Amy gets a call from the police dispatcher. They can't find Ulf. Strange. As they are talking about how spooky the place is at night, Carl makes an offhanded comment about a seance, which Trinity latches onto.
Trinity and Matt grab supplies and set up the seance. Instead of holding hands, Matt pulls handcuffs from his gear bag. Yes, handcuffs. They'll look better on camera. This obviously won't go well. The seance begins, but it takes a while for them to be serious about it. Trinity calls out to the spirits and they sit in silence, listening. Amy can hear everything from the air conditioning to the gravel outside, the pipes, and the hum of the wiring. It's like an extra sensory moment. When she snaps out of it, she notices snot rolling out of Trinity's nose and pooling in her mouth. Eventually, it overflows her mouth and spills down her top. Amy calls out to her, and Trinity starts to choke. This causes everyone else to react, but the strange mucus fluid thing is acting weird, like hovering in the air, and then heads for Carl. ectoplasm. Suddenly, Trinity is free of it, but Carl's voice and demeanor has changed. He says, I am your warden, your healer. I am your North Star, your dispenser of health and goodness. You shall learn to love me like all of the penitents in my beehive. Yikes! All over the place.
No.
Yikes. No, thank you very much.
To Amy, this brings to mind the graffiti on the walls in the ladies' room. All of those names, time spans, the word beehive. The call possessed thing says he has finally brought all of them together. What? Ruth Ann, the spinster. Matt, the romantic. Trinity, the temptress. Amy, the restless one. He talks about how he has built a beehive. All are productive there, and their hard work will mend their degraded minds. He does this creepy monologue for a while before standing, no longer handcuffed, then takes one end of the handcuff and tears out his throat. Yikes.
Yikes.
Ruth Ann and Amy manage to uncuff and get possessed Carl onto the table, but it's too late. Basil walks in, as the cops haven't turned up yet, and is not happy. Suddenly, Carl's hand shoots out, grabs Amy's wrist, and through the wound in his throat says, the doors are open.
Just then, the emergency power shuts off. This is impossible. It's supposed to stay on in all emergencies. But now they're in total darkness. Matt finds a heavy-duty flashlight in his gear bag, and Basil takes it. Switching it on, they notice Carl is gone. What? He just ripped out his own throat. He is dead. How could he have gone anywhere? Sweeping the light around, they find Carl standing as still as a statue. Then he abruptly turns and walks into a display walk-in closet. Following him, they find the door at the end of the closet is ajar. This should not be possible, as it is a fake door. Basil opens it, and on the other side is a dark hallway that leads to the beehive. Slowly, they cross the threshold. The smell is overpowering. Amy receives another phone call from the police dispatch. They still can't find her location, but then her phone dies. Basil agrees to get them out. After he checks around the corner in bedrooms for Carl, who he insists was obviously hurt and not dead. Amy tells him bedrooms isn't there because the hallway that they are in does not exist. There's a loud noise of something huge coming toward them, so Amy and Matt bolt for the door. Back on the showroom floor, they hide behind a cabinet. Then they see movement in the dark. Something is coming. Matt saw people coming. Amy doesn't know what she saw. Then, all the glass around them, from the storage units and Matt's phone screen, shatters. Everything is dark again. Amy reaches out and feels cold flesh. It's definitely not Matt. But before she realizes this, it jams its fingers into her mouth.
Gross.
Strange dead finger mouth. Gross.
And there's another t-shirt.
Strange dead finger mouth?
Hands find her. So many hands. And they grab and grope and push and pull her into a chair. Her wrists are forced down and fastened. Then more bands strap her painfully to the chair. She can smell burning plastic from the heat seal on the plastic straps locking her into place. Possessed Carl comes to her, strokes her face, and tells her that the chair will force her to stop and be strong. He may bleed her, bathe her in ice water, or use boiling water on her. She can't fight back, but it will help her agitated spirit.
No.
Pulling back, possessed Carl and the hands leave Amy, and she can feel the blood pooling in her fingers and feet. Her limbs and back hurt. Her neck is at a painful angle. Amy falls into her own head and measures her worth and achievements and finds them lacking. Struggling to breathe, her mind echoes.
Mm-mm.
Nope. Nope.
No.
Put that in the bucket.
No, thank you very much. Basil finds Amy tied up and, using his pocket knife, every good Orsk manager carries one in case of a flat pack emergency, he is able to free Amy. But she doesn't want to be free. She has given herself to the chair and to Warden Worth's treatments. Her limbs are weak and painful from blood restriction. Eventually, Basil uses a desk chair to wheel Amy around, but all the exits are blocked. Then they hear them. Basil stashes Amy under a table and stands in the middle of the bright and shining path. He uses his phone light to attack the things in the dark. There are hundreds of beehive penitents standing so close that the one behind rests its head on the nape of the one in front. Basil's light goes out, and the horde descends. Ooh, it just keeps getting worse.
It's so bad.
Ooh.
On her hands and knees, Amy is able to locate Basil's drop phone and slowly makes her way along the dark, bright and shining path. Now and then she flashes light around, expecting to see something terrible in the dark. She hears a mechanical whirl sound and dares to shine a light in its direction. It's one of the Orsk treadmill desks, and Trinity is tied to it. Her fingers mangled and she's hunched with the weight of her gear bag. Amy is able to free her, but Trinity protests. She wants Warden Worth to save her. Nope.
No.
Half carrying her, Amy makes her way to the front entrance. Standing at the top of the static escalator, they notice the board of Orsk store management pictures are all of Warden Worth now, and each is defaced in different ways. Suddenly, Basil's phone rings. Amy answers. It's Matt, and he says he's seen Trinity and has to go after her. He doesn't believe Trinity is with her, and Trinity won't say anything. Matt hangs up, and then Trinity runs off. Suddenly, there are animalistic screams. It's Ruth Ann. It just gets worse and worse.
It just keeps getting worse and worse. Amy races through the parking lot to her Honda. She can see the highway running next to the site. How in the world can the police not find this store? It is ridiculous. Pulling away, she has a huge moral dilemma about running away under the guise of getting help. Should she just give in to the chair or stand up and do something? Amy heads back to Orsk. Entering through the employee exit, she makes her way to the break room for first aid supplies. In the supply closet, she sees a huge hole in the drywall and one of Ruth Ann's chapsticks on the floor. Back in the break room, she finds a report dated 1839 saying that Cuyahoga Panopticon is creating lunatics, which the warden revels in. The report recommends immediate closure. And I agree.
Everyone agrees. Stamp of approval. Close that place down. About to head out, Amy hears something in the walls. It's Ruth Ann. She was the one who tore the hole in the supply closet to get into the walls to hide from the creepy crawlies. Amy tells Ruth Ann to meet back at the hall. As Amy is pulling Ruth Ann out, something starts pulling Ruth Ann back in. Ruth Ann's fingers feel weird, and her hands and arms are slick with blood. Amy realises the weird feeling at the end of Ruth Ann's fingers are her bones. She's torn the wall out so much, she's gone through to the bone.
No.
Ugh. Ruth Ann loosens her grip and is pulled back. She tells Amy this isn't her fault, and then she rakes out her own eyes. If she can't see them, they can't see her.
Nope. Mm-mm. No. 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 No.
I hated that entire chapter. No. I remember I messaged you and said no.
No, that was bad. That was bad.
Moving on, please move on.
Amy leaves the closet and heads to the cafe, where faceless men stand in a circle, passing chairs around in a mechanical, rhythmic way. Coming up the stairs are creatures with truncheons who are clearly guards. She runs. They chase. She makes it back to the impossible door and enters the beehive. The corridor seems narrower, and there are hands reaching out, pulling, grabbing, trying to force themselves through her skin into her mouth. Amy pushes through and emerges into a room with someone hanging from a towel rack. The best-selling towel rack in bathrooms, in fact.
The person is Basil, but there is a pillowcase over his head. When she removes the pillowcase, she sees that he has a metal contraption bolted on with a little bell attached. Amy somehow manages to get him down and get the metal contraption off. As they leave the room, they feel water flooding in on their feet. With nothing to lose, Amy follows the water's direction through the hand gauntlet again, and they emerge back on the showroom floor. Locating one of Matt's flashlights from his gear bag, Basil swings it in a wide arc, catching sight of hundreds of bodies staring at them. The penitents part to allow Carl, who is now Wardenworth, through.
Wardenworth monologues again about toil and work being the only cure, how they tried to stop him, so he took all of his 180-plus penitents, sealed them in coffins, and let the waters soothe and flow over them. Amy tries to tell the penitents around them that they are free. Their service and crimes have been paid for. They can leave. This sort of works as they knock Worth to the ground and start grabbing and pulling at him until he disappears into the crowd. The crowd of penitents then surges toward Amy and Basil, separating them and forcing them away. They push Amy into a small wooden box, and she can hear the nails being hammered in.
After having a panic attack, given the circumstances, it's allowed, Amy assesses the situation. She is lying twisted, having been jammed into the coffin with no room to move, and freezing water is coming in, numbing her. She realises she is going to drown. Great. The box isn't actually a coffin, but a popular brand of closet orc cells that is returned more often than not, because it's really poorly made. It breaks easy, as it's a pain to put together. With her trusty magic tool that all Orsk employees carry, Amy is able to unscrew the closet, force it open, and slither out. There is water everywhere. But she is able to locate Basil in a different closet coffin. Basil insists they need to leave while Amy wants to find Matt and Trinity. She reluctantly agrees to leave with Basil. The water's flooding down the stairs and the second floor balcony. Something in the water hits Basil and forces him down the waterfall. Amy goes after him. They get banged up but emerge, relatively unscathed. They're going to have to go through the marketplace, the warehouse, and the checkouts in order to get out. It's an unclean, unpleasant, rat-infested journey, but they finally reach the doors. As a rolling cascade of rats heads toward them, Amy is able to grab the fire extinguisher and use it to smash the glass of the door.
They spill through the doors onto the asphalt. The fire department, police, and paramedics are there. It seems they finally found this giant fucking store.
They finally updated the GPS.
I don't even understand. While one tends to Amy's head injury, another looks after Basil. Ruthanne, Matt, and Trinity are nowhere. Pat, the store general manager, is running between them and the Orsk consultant team, who can be seen scribbling away. Pat hands Basil and Amy an Orsk business card with Tom Larson's personal email address on it. He'd like to give them both promotions and a desk job with benefits at corporate, so long as they don't talk to the media. Basil is happy to go along. Amy is angry. Orsk will quietly acknowledge Ruthanne's disappearance as she was on the clock, but Matt and Trinity weren't, so are they really Orsk's responsibility? Basil agrees with Pat, and Amy punches Pat in the face.
For months, Amy doesn't live. She survives. That night still haunts her. She can't sleep. She can't concentrate. Ruth Ann's memorial was huge, packed with Orsk employees and customers. Matt's was more relaxed. Trinity's was close to those within her church. Orsk blamed the terrible night on faulty construction, water pipes and sprinkler systems, and eventually closed the location. A new store called Planet Baby took over. It's the same flat-packed experience, but for your baby, which makes it really more terrifying. Much, much more terrifying. Amy gets a job at Planet Baby, and on her first night with a bag full of batteries, fishing wire, flashlights and other useful tools, she prepares to enter to look for Matt, Trinity and Ruth Ann. Basil is there too. He got a job at Planet Baby 3 months ago because he decided he couldn't leave Ruth Ann, Matt and Trinity to the Beehive because they were his responsibility. He's already tried to find them once. As they enter, he warns her not to look into the crypts. The end!
Yikes!
Question mark!
Yikes! Yikes. How frightening is Planet Baby going to be?
I want to see it. I do not want to see it.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no.
Yikes.
No. Do not like.
Do not like, but also love at the same time.
Yeah. You know, when Erin at Worcester Public Library suggested it to us, she said that it's really good. It starts off quite funny and relaxed, and you kind of think, this is supposed to be horror. When's it going to get to it? And then the second half of the book, it just turns. And yeah, she spot on described that. And it was like, as soon as the lights went out and the sounds kicked in, you knew it was going to turn into something.
Yeah, I think the lesson that we can all learn here is not to have a seance. Because that is when everything literally went to shit.
Not to have a seance in a flat pack furniture shop. Or just in general.
I would say in general. Because you never know what's going to happen. But I think
in my experience, nothing.
But you're not in a haunted novel. You're not in a horror story. In a horror story, you should never, ever have a seance.
Hey, I'm in 2020. Right, I'm just going to put this out there. Public service announcement. It's 2020, people. Let's not do seances because we don't need anything else.
Yeah, nothing good is going to come from that.
Yeah.
I think that the seance was my favorite part. I know I'm saying, like, don't have a seance. But I think it was really a standout moment for me, which is now in season 3, what we're going to call our favorite and our least favorite parts, because really they all stand out. But the seance was my favorite. It was just so well written. Mm-hmm. Like, you could feel like you were there. You know, it's like silly at first. Like, everyone thinks, you know, when you're sitting around trying to do something serious in like the complete quiet.
Yeah.
And everyone's giggling and like looking around and thinking, haha, this isn't going to work. But then, you know, you finally start to chill out and you calm down and you try to take things seriously. And then you look over and your friend has snot running out of her nose, like, so much, and she gets so grossed out by it. She's like, oh god, look at all that snot. How's that coming out of her mouth? What is she doing? She's taking this so seriously that she's not even going to stop this snot fountain. And then it fills up her mouth, and then it pours out of her mouth and just like comes out, and it's all down her shirt and it's all over the place. But then it's ectoplasm, and it turns into a creature that then takes over Carl, and then Carl murders himself. Yikes.
That's so good.
But yikes.
The way you described, like, it took a while for everything to calm down, and then once everybody calmed down and realized, you know, let's get this serious, let's be serious, that is the precise point this book turned as well. And it's just such a clear marking from going from the quite dark comedy to this terrifying horror. Yeah, you're right. It was just chef's kiss.
It was so well done. It really was spectacular.
And if there's one bodily fluid that I cannot stand, it's snot.
But it's not snot, it's ectoplasm.
Yeah, but before you realise it's ectoplasm and they're describing it as this mucousy snot thing, I was like gagging. I was like, no.
Yeah.
No.
And then just imagine it filling up your mouth.
No, can we not?
We need to pause for a moment and go vomit and then come back. Oh,
God. It's like the one bodily fluid I just can't deal with properly. I mean, I do a lot. It's one thing if you're wiping the nose of your child or something like that, but it's another thing if you're watching. Well, yes, it is terrible, but you do get used to that one. But it's another thing when you're watching somebody's snot coming down the face and you can't do anything about it. Like, I thought Amy went far too long before saying anything.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been a slight dribble. And I'd be like, oh, wipe your nose, pet. There's a tissue. Because I've always got a tissue in my pocket. There's a tissue. Please, blow your nose. Let's move on. It was gross. It was disgusting.
Nope. And then it fills up her mouth.
Stop saying it.
I have to say it every time because
stop it.
Because of your reaction, I have to say it every time. I am trying really hard to make you vomit.
I won't be sick. It will not happen. But just know the gag reflex will kick in and then you'll have to deal with the visual consequences.
And I'll have to edit out your Oh,
gross. So gross.
Terrible.
But
so
yeah,
good.
It was a standout
moment.
Do you know what? The two, I mean, it was from first page to end page, it was a standout book. It was brilliant.
Yes.
But the two scenes, like you've said, the Sion scene with the snot, and I can't stand snot. And the other standout moment for me was the thing that freaks me out as well, and you know this too, and it's when Ruth Ann is in the wall. I cannot stand things in walls. Like, there's that episode in Supernatural where there's something in the walls and I just have to avoid it now because I just freak out. I remember watching a horror movie that was probably, I was probably far too young for it, and it was about these children in the walls, and I don't remember anything about it apart from the fact there's children in the walls, and I swear to goodness it scarred me. I just don't like it. So as soon as Amy found the hole in the wall in the closet, and you knew it was Ruth Ann in there, and then she's standing in the breakout room and she can hear something in the walls, I was like, nope, put that in the fucking bucket. I freaked out. I just did not like it because then I was thinking it's Ruth Ann. And then I was thinking, well, there's going to be something in the walls with Ruth Ann because she is not going to get away scot-free. As nice as she is, she ain't going to get away scot-free. And I was like, nah. It was brilliant, really well done. And then, when Ruth Ann's trying to get out of the hole and Amy's grabbing at her hands and it's slick with the blood, and she realises Ruth Ann can't grip her properly because she doesn't have any fingernails. It's bone. And then she's being dragged back through in proper horror movie style. You can see it. And then she just starts gouging her own eyes out. I literally put the book down at this point on my lap and just went, no, we do not like this. No. And then quickly went back to reading it because it was flipping amazing.
Yeah.
It was so well written. Like, it's a very visual book as well. So I didn't listen to the audiobook for this.
I did, and the audiobook was also good.
but I just read it. And the book is designed like an IKEA catalogue. It has like a contents page, it has about Orsk, it even has like order forms and at the end, Baby Planet discount vouchers and all this kind of stuff, and it just really adds to the aesthetic of the book. And that is so well done, and it's so well written as well that you could actually, you visualise it so well. Like, you can see the you can see the set, you can see the characters so well, you can see the horrific, like, panning the lights around and seeing the hundreds of penitents. The description's simple, but by gum it's effective.
Yeah, it is. Since you didn't read by audio, I want to take a second to talk about it. Because, yeah, the book is great. I have it on the shelf behind me right now. I borrowed it from the library so I could look at it. And it has all the cool stuff in. The audiobook has two narrators, Ty Sammons and Bronson Pinchot. And Bronson doesn't do very much narration. There's like an intro page to each chapter that features, it starts out like a piece of furniture or something in the Orsk showroom. And then it progressively gets worse and it becomes, you know, walking around the wheel forever or being strapped into the chair. But those intros are done by Bronson Pinchot, and he does a fantastic job narrating those. It sounds like a commercial or an advertisement or something, and there's music, and it's just like, it starts out and it's so pleasant, and they're talking about, oh, you can get this brand new piece of furniture at your local Orsk. And then it gets progressively worse every single time, and his voice gets more menacing at the beginning of every chapter. It's brilliant.
Does the audio also tell you what colours that come in or the materials? Because that was a fantastic little change as well. So, you know, as they get to the available in nightmarish steel and stuff like that, it's just those tiny little details really just add to it, and it's a full experience. Actually, it's really well done. I want to see this as a movie. I need to see this
movie.
It has been optioned, but I don't know how far things through are because of the plague of 2020.
Right. It was just, they just mentioned it this summer that they've optioned it for film. It was several years ago optioned for TV, but then that fell through. And so now this summer they've just come back to say, now it's going to be a movie and Grady Hendrix is writing it. So it's probably going to be great. Let's just hope, fingers crossed, that it happens.
Yes. Yes.
Because I want to see it. I will be there.
You can see it. I mean, it's just that. I like it when somebody who is involved in the actual original production gets to be involved in the TV production as well. Because you know it's going to be very faithful, or the changes are, you know, justified by the author.
Yeah, they're like purposefully done.
Yeah. And especially given his background, he'll understand the necessary changes and what would be visually more appealing. Yeah, I really do want to see this. I think it'd be very interesting.
Me too. Yeah. We talked a bit off podcast, as we do all the time, about fan casting.
Yes.
And that's something that you are a pro at, and you do it all the time. Whenever we talk about things, you're like, oh, when I was reading this, I imagined this person being in it, and this is who I would choose to be in it, and this is who I would fan cast. I never do that, but because we talked about it, I did. I tried to fan cast as I was reading it.
Okay.
I didn't do everyone. I couldn't think of a couple of characters. But I think for Amy, I would either go with Zendaya or Chloe Grace Moretz. They're both the same age. They're the appropriate age. They're both exceedingly sarcastic. Uh-huh. And I think they would do a great job. Either one of them.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, deadpan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of pictured, I wouldn't put her in it, but I kind of pictured like Anna Kendrick as Amy, but I wouldn't cast her as Amy.
Yeah.
Like, if you wanted a description for somebody, I would say, play like Anna Kendrick and you know exactly who I mean. But no, I think you've got some good casting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then, for Ruth Ann, I thought that they needed to be like a funny sort of slapstick kind of character. And so I've decided on Melissa McCarthy or Kristen Wiig. And mostly Kristen Wiig from her Target skits on SNL.
I don't have a frame of reference for that.
Oh, that's so sad. You need to look this up.
You don't have SNL over here.
I know you don't have it.
I can't see Melissa McCarthy. If I'm honest, I think both of those ladies are too young.
They're not that young, though. So who do you pick? Someone older? Like a 70-year-old?
God, wouldn't you just love Helen Mirren?
She's too old. She would have retired long ago.
In Umbrella Academy, there is a donut diner style thing. And there's a waitress, Agnes, played by Sheila McCarthy. And that's who I pictured as Ruth Ann. She's around the same age as my mum. So she's in her 60s. And she's... the reason is, it's probably because I've been watching Umbrella Academy. But when I saw her, I thought she looked like she could be the sweet lady who remembers everybody's kids' names, etc., but she could turn on a dime. So that's kind of like, that's who I was kind of seeing for Ruth Ann. I can see where you're coming from with Kristen Wiig. I can't see Melissa McCarthy personally, but I can see where you're coming from with Kristen Wiig. She has more range as an actress than I think she's given credit for.
Yeah, she does. So then for Basil, I chose Keegan-Michael Key. He is Basil. I will not accept anything else.
God, yes. 100% yes.
I will not accept any other person.
No, I can get it. Yeah, I can see that.
And you know, he's super good friends with Jordan Peele, who is fantastic at making horror movies. So I'm going to say that it'll rub off.
No, I can see that. Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't really think of anyone from Matt or Trinity. Also, I started doing something else, and so I gave up. But I did choose Nick Frost for Carl, because he needs to be a great big hairy man with a beard. And honestly, Nick Frost kind of sometimes looks like a homeless man, so...
More often than not, he looks like a homeless man.
Yeah. So I think he'd be fine.
The only problem is he can't do an American accent very well.
He can be a homeless man with a British accent.
Okay. Yeah, I struggle...
You know, there's a lot of people who live in the United States that were not born in the United States.
Shocking.
Shocking, I know, that they're welcome with open arms. Something about the Statue of Liberty, you know.
Well, I just like the fact that we're all, you know, from one world. We're all from the same goddamn planet.
Nah.
Nobody's got the equal rights to live.
Nah. Nah, it's not true.
Let's not get too political.
No, let's not.
I didn't really cast anybody in my mind for Matt and Trinity either, because I kept changing my mind. I kind of get this, I wouldn't be surprised if from somebody from Riverdale turned up to be Matt.
Yeah
that kind of, and I don't know, I think there will probably be Amy, Basil and Ruth Ann for me will be like the named people.
Yes.
And Matt and Trinity would be the new stars.
Yeah.
So they kind of like, they kept morphing, and Like, at one point, Matt was a brunette with that floppy hair kind of hairdo.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, he was Jensen Ackles. At another point, he was Chicken. At another point, basically, I went through the entirety of the Supernatural cast for Matt, which was very mm-hmm. pleasant. But, you know, he just morphed constantly. I didn't decide on what I wanted particularly because he wasn't, like, a main character. So he's kind of like, he would be like a new casting. And the same with Trinity as well. It's difficult. It's just got this like K-pop kind of quirkiness that you can imagine that if, even if you see her in the morning, she's got pink hair, and then you see her at lunchtime, she's got green hair, and then you see her at nighttime, she's got purple hair. I wouldn't be surprised by that. So she just kind of morphed constantly in my head. That was good. Did you have a favourite character then?
I really liked Ruth Ann. I did. Mm-hmm. She was, you know, a hero. May she rest in peace. Like, you know, you think that she's quiet and a scaredy cat, and then she goes and flips the bed over to find the homeless man, and she yells at Amy, like, look, this is your job. Shut up and do it. So she's great.
Like, that was actually my surprising moment.
Was did she flip the bed?
No, well. Like, full on four poster, solid orc bed, just flipped it.
Yes. It's not a cheap IKEA, I mean Orsk bed. It's like
mahogany.
Heavy duty. Yeah. Yes.
It's an antique mahogany.
Carved in one solid piece of mahogany, yes. So it was from a tree that is 2,000 years old. Yes.
Yes. Yes, that's what she does.
But she just... whoop.
Flip. Two fingers. It was her turning on a dime, that whole flip, that two sides to her. You think she's so nice, she's really... She's probably quite shady, actually.
Yeah.
That was probably the more surprising thing for me, was... how she was one extreme or the other, and how she went from being terrified of the creepy crawlies and not being able to go in the showroom one second to actually I'm gonna flip the bed, I'm gonna open the door, I'm sick of taking this shit and getting on with it. And that was probably the most surprising thing for me, because it was unexpected.
Before I talk about what surprised me, did you have a favourite character?
Not really.
I feel like they were like... It was like a crew.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to pick one person out because they're all a group.
Yeah, I can totally understand why you've picked Ruth Ann out. I get that, because she was probably... she's the most diverse of all the characters. She had the most change... of all the characters. And she's the one that, out of all of them, you wanted to save Ruth Ann.
Yeah, you want her, you wanted to pull her out of the wall. You tried really hard to pull her out of the wall.
Exactly.
Despite the fact that she had bone fingers.
Yeah. Did you look at your fingers after that and go, ah?
No, but I did think about, like, you know, you said that being behind walls, stuff in the walls creeps you out the most. Fingernail breaking freaks me out the most.
And the way Amy kept pressing down on her missing finger.
Yeah.
To, like, reassert her.
Yeah, because earlier in the book, her fingernail ripped off.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I once cut my thumb. I think it was when I was... cutting vegetables on a freshly sharpened with a freshly sharpened knife, and I cut my thumb and basically cut half of the nail off.
Blew.
And I remember taking the plaster off at work. Ooh. And the pain was so great I passed out. And that was a plaster ripping off. So, you know, she's pressing down on her missing fingernail, and I'm like, I'd have been gone. Every single time, I'd have just passed out. I'd have been woken up in that chair about half a dozen times by now. Yeah. So I was like, okay. Yeah. But no, the whole it was an ensemble piece. Ruth Ann stood out for the reasons we've said, but there wasn't one single character I would say was my favourite, because you needed all of them. Like, Trinity and Matt were in the background, like we say, we haven't fan cast them because they're kind of semi-interchangeable. Yeah. But, you know, they're all, it's like even the Penitents, they were amazing. They did, you know, they did see a thing, but they shoved their dead fingers into the mouse, tried to get into every orifice, and it was gross. You couldn't have the book without them. And everybody brought something to it. I didn't particularly overly like Amy. I wasn't bothered for Amy so much.
Yeah.
But she was a relatable character because you understand working retail a long, long time ago, I just want to sit down. And the way she's just like, nothing goes my way, I'm tired.
Yeah.
Yes, I get that. I 100% get that. So she was a very real character. I think it was nice and tight. It wasn't like anybody unnecessary.
Yeah.
But there wasn't anybody huge.
I feel like Basil was also really great because he starts out as the manager that you absolutely despise. And you hate everything about him because he's like such a stickler for the rules. But then at the end, when he's taken a job at Planet Baby to come back and try to find them all over again and go through everything again, you think, oh, okay, so maybe he's not so bad after all.
And he's been there for 3 months longer than you, love. And if you bothered to check, he'd been working at McDonald's for the year before that.
Yeah.
It's taken you a long time. I mean, you've had a trauma. I'm going to give you a lot of benefit of the doubt. But he's been there longer than you, purposefully, to get these people out and already tried.
Yeah.
That's it. You do start to... Yeah, he's an absolute douche canoe at the beginning. And then by the end, he's got a lot of redeeming features.
Yeah.
And when you learn that he's actually taking care of his 9-year-old... sister.
Yeah, like he's got a lot of stuff going on in the background, but here he is every day trying to do the right thing, trying to make the store great, trying to keep people safe.
Yeah.
When you're Amy's age, when you're young, when you're starting out, you automatically hate your boss. But after you get to know them for a little bit, you realize that they do these things on purpose and they're not actually terrible people.
Yeah.
For the most part. Sometimes. you can't have a terrible manager. They exist.
I can just see you mentally reeling off some bad managers. Because I've just done that.
Okay. So now I want to go back. And also, it's kind of a semi-relevant segue because we were just talking about Basil going back to work for Planet Baby. So I want to say that I was surprised that Planet Baby is exactly like Orsk and the whole thing is just going to happen over again, but this time in friendly baby pastel colors.
Oh, that's worse. That's worse.
Like, yikes.
There's
going to
be creepy clowns and like dead-eyed stuffed animals.
Don't build something in that same spot. Surely they would have had to at least tear the building down and start over again. It was Jumanji'd on the inside. They would have had to have at least...
Adjective. Jumanji'd.
They would have had to have done something. I say tear it down and start
building,
all over.
The thing is, though, it probably is cheaper to just tear the building down and put something back there because they're all prefabricated. They're ready to just be nut and bolted together.
Yeah.
Just giant metal
especially
boxes.
If it's a flat pack store.
I've got the magic tool.
Yeah. Just get your magic tool out of your pocket and screw all of those millions of screws together and then you'll have a Planet Baby.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yes, it is probably a brand new building, but it's still on cursed land. That entire place needs to be dug up and saged and whatever it is you do to cleanse and eradicate and despookify.
Yeah.
Because that place is messed up.
Do you think that Carl was already feeling the effects? Because he'd been living in there. Let's say that he's been in there 24 hours a day for who knows how long. So do you think he was already feeling the effects, and that's why he mentioned having the seance, because he's already influenced by the warden?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I thought the same thing, but I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't bonkers or something.
Yeah, because even when they're just talking to him as Carl, there's something a little off about him.
Yeah. But that could also be the homelessness.
Well, yeah. But the warden needs to be there, and I think as soon as there's somebody who's going to be spending any excessive amount of time there, the warden will have started to control. So, I think Carl had been affected by Warden Worth for a while.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Not good. Right. No. Can we talk about the handcuffs at the seance for just one second? We've already talked about the seance, but how stupid an idea is it to have handcuffs at a seance?
It looks good on camera.
Bullshit. You know, I love these ghost hunting programs. You know, I watch loads of them. I adore them. I've seen so many seances on these things. Having a shiny little bit of metal around your wrist ain't gonna do shit. I call bullshit. Having those handcuffs was stupid.
Yes, of course it was. But if he didn't have the handcuffs, then how would Carl have killed himself?
With one of those tiny little stupid pencils.
A tiny cough pencil? I feel like it would break.
Or the paper tape measures and give himself like 1,000 paper cuts.
He could have strangled himself with a paper.
They're measure. Not that good. In the bulb. The kitty's bulb. The crusher. An overabundance of meatballs.
Yes. He could have gorged himself on meatballs.
Yeah.
And lingonberry jam.
Or buried himself under the frozen meatballs.
Is it time?
It's time. It's definitely time.
It's time.
It's time for the first Would You Rather of season 3.
Oh, hooray! And guess what? It's exactly like every other Would You Rather.
This one's got some horrible questions.
Well, it has too, because it's a horror story. We couldn't have fun Would You Rather questions. They have to be terrible.
Would you rather eat a meatball or a dime bar?
I ate meatballs for dinner last night. Give me the meatballs.
That's because you went hiking.
I know. I did it on purpose.
It's time for Would You Rather.
It is. It is time. Hooray.
Oh, dang. Okay. We asked. Okay. So our social media for Facebook has slightly changed, as you know.
Yes.
It is now a Facebook group where we can actually do polls.
Yay! But you have to join the group.
You
do. Don't forget. We talked about this briefly in our last episode of season 2.
The Night Circus.
The Night Circus. But you have to join this group. So you can answer our Would You Rather questions. And we're adding old Would You Rather questions.
Mm-hmm. For funsies.
For funsies.
And all it is Would You Rathers. No other posts. Yeah. That's it.
You can't even make posts there.
No. Just
only vote. Would You Rather.
Vote and comment and that's it. We obviously will be sharing the poll on the regular Fictional Hangover Facebook page. So you can just click the link. Ask to join. You're in. Vote.
Yeah. Unless
Ghost Bomb Baby. Yeah.
Unless you have a very new Facebook account, you'll just be added to the group automatically. I've taken away all things. All you have to do is click to join, and then you will be a member of the group.
Yeah. it is unmoderated.
Yes.
So please do that and vote, because we love your votes and we love your comments.
We do. We really do.
We do.
I'm happy. Mm-hmm. I'm happy that we got several votes in our group this time.
Yes.
Not as many as we had when you could make polls from our Facebook page. But
it's a workaround. While we harass Facebook constantly about their business decisions, it's a workaround. Instagram remains the same. Comment in the feed and vote via the story. Twitter, same. The polls are fine.
Yes. Thank you, Twitter.
Yes. And thank you to everybody who voted on the new Facebook page.
Yes. Tell your friends.
Tell your friends. So on social media, we asked, would you rather be swept away in a river of rats or be trapped in a closet coffin?
You know what's great about this? We asked the
most delightful questions.
This is the least bad of our questions.
It really is. We asked each other some horrible things. We're not nice people. Are we the bad guys?
Yeah. I mean, this is clear to everyone who knows me. I am the villain. I am the villain of my own story.
So on Facebook, 80% said rats and 20% would rather be trapped in the closet coffin. On Instagram, it was 33% rats and 67% coffin. And on Twitter, exactly the same, 33% rats and 67% coffin. And we had some absolutely amazing comments, and I've pulled a vast amount of them because they are brilliant. So I think we should just dial into them.
Yes. Candace on Facebook said, I'm claustrophobic, so the closet would not be great. At least with the rats, I have the possibility of becoming their leader if I play my cards right. Get a little pan flute. And become
the Pied Piper of Orsk?
Yes. I think Candace would make a great Pied Piper.
What would she do with all those rats?
Make them do her bidding. Create an army.
Is she using make her a rat for king? Good or for bad? Make a coat of rats.
Mm. Rat coat.
Rat coat. Just, Colin on Facebook.
She's got a little tune. You'll do a little toot. And they become, her rat army forms a rat coat. And then she does another one. Rat hat. They become a rat king. And then she does another one. Rat hat.
Perfect.
Okay.
If
I'm going to stop.
If you do that, Candace would appreciate it.
Yeah, please do. Please do, Candace.
Rat so coat. Colin on Facebook said, I'd have to go for the river of rats. Trapped inside anything is not my idea of a good time. I mean, neither is the whole rats thing. But coffin time, nope. No, thank you.
Casey on Facebook said, river of rats for me. I'm super claustrophobic, again, so I would probably die of fright if I were trapped in a coffin. At least with a river of rats, it seems like there might be a better chance of getting away. Plus, rats are pretty cute. So Casey could also be a Pied Piper of rats. With a rat coat.
True.
And a rat king. And a rat hat. And an army of rats.
Well, she'd have to fight Constance on Facebook because she is also River of Rats, please. Very claustrophobic over here. I can just make believe that the rats are kittens or something. There's a big difference between a kitten and a rat.
Yeah. I'm really glad that all of these people that have mentioned rats and not being in coffins because they're claustrophobic are all very, like, pleased with the rats. Like, well, you know, at least I could become the rat leader, and rats are really cute, you know?
I have a plan. And what they're need pleasant. Is more people with plans.
Yeah.
Two tiny thumbs up.
Yeah. So Ashley on Facebook said, I already sleep in a coffin-like bed, enclosed with air holes for breathing purposes. I'm sure I could find some way to breathe in there. Also, rats terrify the hell out of me. So she is not on Team Rat.
No, no. I think Ashley might be on Team Vampire, actually.
I think that she might be.
cool.
She did share a picture of her coffin bed, and it was pretty cool. I followed up. I was curious.
As you should, as you should. California B on Instagram said, "Oh my god, you guys!" I guess, assuming the closet coffin is a cheap one, I'll pick that so I can kick my way out.
Yes. California B knows what's up with our questions, though. California B is Bridget Tyler, and she has joined us on several occasions for Would You Rather.
Well,
and she loves
Bridget
our
Tyler
terrible
is
questions.
Friend of the show. She knows what we're like.
Yeah.
She knows how all of our terrible questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Next question. Now, this one really, really makes sense if you have read the book, but would you rather turn the crunk forever or walk on the Albuquerque forever? So essentially, these are things, these are the torture forms in the beehive. One is turning a crank forever, and the other is...
It was walking
Trinity,
wheel, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was
like
a
Trinity
hamster
wheel. Walking on the treadmill with her heavy gear bag.
Yeah.
Walking forever in place, or turning a crank forever. Turning a crunk forever. Which one are you going to do? Crunk?
Am I tied to the treadmill like she was?
Well, yeah.
It weighed
and
it
I
down.
Assume if you're turning the crunk forever, you know, you're probably going to be in a terrible chair or something. You're not just going to be free to waltz off. Let's just assume the worst.
Kronk, possibly.
Because you just wanted to say Kronk.
They're both terrible, but probably the Kronk, because at least it's like, I don't know.
Really? This is just essentially, would you rather have really buff arms or really buff legs?
That's the pleasant way of putting it. I'm going to say Kronk, just because I like saying Kronk.
Me too. That's the only reason why I picked the Kronk, because I like to say Kronk.
Kronk.
We'll pick the Kronk.
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 Okay.
Okay,
now we know our torture devices for the rest of eternity. Would you rather, speaking of torture devices for the rest of eternity, would you rather work for Orsk or Planet Baby?
Orsk, hands down. I don't like babies. I don't like children. Unless I was doing story time in Planet Baby, then that's a different story. That would be delightful. But I don't think that it would be so pleasant and that I would get to do something like that. So I would rather work for Orsk. Plus, meatballs. What are you going to eat if you work for Planet Baby? They're not going to have meatballs. Babies don't eat meatballs. Meatballs in a jar. Liquefied meatballs.
Okay.
Based on our horror reasoning, that question was too pleasant.
You are obviously a person who has never been into a place like Planet Baby. So
why would I?
Exactly. You don't know the horror that those type of shops are. The anxiety that they induce. The tiny terrors. I don't mind children. I mean, I have one. That's the one I like. I've decided to keep it. Other children?
Yeah, so I don't want to work in Planet Baby. That's terrifying. People would bring their babies all the time.
And
like,
have you seen
try
the terrifying shit you find in those places?
I
Dead
don't want to go to there.
Dolls, clowns everywhere?
No, I don't want to go to there. That's
I
why
will,
I'm working
I will say I have been in like similar style shops whilst great with child. And there was one that had a very delightful cafe and it had like proper patisserie. So I just gouged myself on cake. So that was very delightful. But other than that, there's just screaming and crying and people wetting their pants. And that's the adults. Never mind anything without bladder control. And it's like, yeah, they are not happy places. They are designed to suck your soul more than Orsk. Long story short, Orsk.
Orsk. Okay, next question. Since that one was pleasant, semi-pleasant, not so gruesome. Would you rather see someone rip out their own throat or gouge out their own eyes?
Rip out the throat.
Why?
I don't know. If it is the homeless Carl versus Ruthann Bonefingers, I feel like I could deal with the ripped out throat better.
With the handcuff hook?
Yeah. But I can't give you a solid reasoning. I don't know why. That's just, it's what came in my head. It's like, mm-hmm. you could mentally survive that easier than the gouging of the eyes. So that's what I'm going with absolutely no reasoning behind it. You?
Yeah, I don't really want to pick either one of them.
Well, you've got to.
I know, but
it's gross anyway.
It's gross and terrible either way. I feel like the throat cutting is less survivable than the eyeball poking. But when you poke your eyeballs out, you're really close to digging around in your brain.
Yeah. I mean, if you're gouging out your throat, you're ripping out your airway.
Yeah, and, you know, there's your jugular there, you know, just spurting out blood all over the place. I feel like pulling out your eyeballs would be less messy.
Eyeball goo, though. So,
yeah, eyeball goo is pretty bad. I don't know. They're both bad.
I think that the throat one, I feel like I would less likely be traumatized by it and be like, my throat. Whereas the eyes, I'd be constantly making sure my eyes are okay, and I'd probably get paranoid about anything going near them.
Mm, yeah.
Like, I'm kind of thinking future counselling and trauma.
I'm gonna answer this time with a proper reason, loosely.
Why are you breaking this trend?
I don't know.
God, you're getting all fancy for season three.
I am going to go with ripping out the throat. If it's done in the same way as Carl did in the book. Because he used a tool. And I feel like using a tool is less gross than using your own bone fingers to rip your eyes out.
Exactly.
Tool.
I'm with you.
Okay. Yikes.
Not good.
Yikes. What is our last question, Jesus? I want this to be over with. It's gross.
Okay. Would you rather go through the impossible door? That should not be there. It should not be there at all. Or the hole in the wall, hand-carved by Ruthann.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind, behind the impossible door could be the hand gauntlet hallway of ickiness, and there's something in the wall that pulled Ruthann back.
I'm going to go through the impossible door because the hand gauntlet wasn't always there. So it might not be there when I go through the impossible door. It might not be there. So that's the way I'm going to go. On that slim chance that there's not going to be fingers in my mouth.
You could put it, if you know it's there, you put your hands over the mouth and just kind of pelt it down.
Could do.
I'm going down through the impossible door as well. Because as we clearly saw earlier, I do not like things in walls.
No, so you're not going to become myself. A thing in a wall.
Yeah. I ain't going down a wall.
Mm-mm. No.
I don't know. Oh, God, no. I just...
Yeah, I don't know. Ugh. I do wonder, though, once you went through the hole in the wall... Like, do you think that you'd be able to work your way out?
I think she ended up in the beehive.
Well, of course she ended up in the beehive. But if you were not in Orsk and you were not potentially about to become a penitent in the beehive, if you went through a hole in the wall, do you think you could find your way out? Just a general hole in the wall. Not a murdersome hole in the wall.
Eventually... because I think you'd start to see like grates or holes or something, some kind of seams.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Thinking of hole in the wall, I think a lot about the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot about the movie The Boy with the little doll boy, and you have to babysit the doll as if it's a real person.
Yes.
It's a good movie. You should watch it. Everyone should watch it. Except for Claire, because she doesn't like things in walls. My God, is that the end of Would You Rather?
I'm going to ask you a question.
No.
No, I'm going to ask you, would you actually spend a night in the very haunted and possibly cursed Fat Pack furniture store in complete darkness? Or would you hand that idea back to the deputy manager and say, dude, you can put that in the fucking bucket?
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Personally, if I were Amy in this situation, I mean, I know that she needs money, but dude, you cannot spring on me working overnight at my current shift where I would have to work a full shift and then turn around and come right back and work overnight.
Mm-mm. We have laws against that in this country.
Yeah, if you needed me to come back tomorrow and work overnight, then sure. But don't spring it on me.
Exactly.
So what are you doing? Are you just asking me that question? You're just torturing
me. Oh, well, you know, I'll put that idea in the fucking bucket.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I have done overnights at haunted locations, and they are fun.
Yeah.
But that's as a, like, you know, a ghost hunter. Not as a...
Ghost bomb, baby, yeah!
Ghost bomb, yeah! But not as a an employee for a freaking flatback company.
No. Especially because he was like, hey, we're going to stay overnight because there's vandals. Like, uh-uh. No, hire a company for that.
I like the fact that he said, you're literally the last people I'm asking. I've asked everybody else and they've got something on. And you know, it's kind of like, dude, you've literally left this till the 11th hour before the consultation team comes. And you are one man and two women spending the night and having and asking them to deal with something that could turn a situation that could escalate.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, dude, no.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm.
Not that I'm saying women couldn't kick their ass as the vandals.
Sure. But... I mean, Ruth Ann flipped over a 3,000-pound mahogany four-poster bed with one hand. With two fingers on one hand.
Exactly. With the power of her mind.
It's even better. Oh my God. That's the end. That's the end of Would You Rather.
Moving on.
No. All, they were all gruesome.
As soon as we turn terrible. To superpowers or mute powers, it's all...
Yeah, we know. That's
we know
abort. Abort. Okay. Now it's time for our favorite final thought quote. Do you have any? Perhaps a one for fun?
I've got a fun one, and I've got a semi-serious one.
Okay.
So my for fun one.
One for fun.
Scratch a rebel, and you'll always find a father's credit card.
That's pretty good.
I need to find a rebel. And my not for funsy one is, in the end, everything always comes down to those two choices. Stay down, or stand up.
Excellent.
What about you?
I also have a one for fun that is based on Trinity.
That's because she's the quirky fun character.
Yeah. Trinity was one of those happy, super popular, high energy girls who reminded Amy of the creatures from Gremlins. She was fun for about half an hour. Then you wanted to stuff her in a blender. That's my favorite part, is stuffing her in a blender.
I would also accept microwave.
Yeah, sure.
Any kitchen appliance, really.
Really? And you can find several of them on the shelves at Orsk.
Oh, reasonably priced. And come with a 1-year guarantee.
Yes. I chose this because, one, Gremlins. Gremlins is great. But, two, stuffing her in a blender made me think of my favorite final thought quote from Random Shit Flying Through the Air. Go fuck your dick in a blender.
It's one of the greatest quotes from any book. It's just poetry.
It really is. Okay, so that was my one for fun. And now I also have another one that is not fun.
Oh, sad thing. Well, it's a grizzly. It doesn't involve snot.
No. God. No. This one is real. Life doesn't care what you want. Other people don't care what you want. All that matters is what you do. Stay down or stand up. It all ties together.
It does. That is all awfully familiar as well. That sounds like quotes that we've had from other books as well, with very similar tone. Yeah. I like it.
Excellent. All right. Now it's time for, if you liked this, try this. What have you got for us?
I'm going to recommend the book that you recommended me. So it's a double recommendation.
Oh!
Yes. And the reason is because, one, it's bloody brilliant. And two, they are based on other stories or songs. Yeah. Or movies. Pop culture references. And it kind of ties nicely into Horror Store, which is based on, you know, something else within pop culture and life. And it's Slasher Girls and Monster Boys, and it's an anthology edited by April Genevieve Tushok?
So good. That's how I would say it, Tushok.
April Genevieve Tushok. It's really good, isn't it? It's amazing.
Yeah, I loved it so much. I did not read them in order, though.
I did. Well, I listened to them. I pressed play. And at certain points, just sat and just listened to it. Because, ooh.
Yeah.
I will say there were some stories where I expected what happened, but it was the way that it got there that was very well done. And there was others that just were like freaky as, and I'm like, oh no, don't like that.
Yeah.
And it was a very, very good mix, very, very smart. The blurb, as of Goodreads, is a host of the smartest young adult authors come together for this collection of scary stories and psychological thrillers curated by Between the Devil and Deep Blue Sea's April Genevieve Tushok. Each story draws from a classic tale or two, sometimes of the horror genre, sometimes not, to inspire something new and fresh and terrifying. There are no superficial scares here. These are stories that will make you think even as you keep you on the edge of your seat. From bloody horror to supernatural creatures to unsettling all too possible realism, this collection has something for any reader looking for a thrill. Fans of the TV's Walking Dead, True Blood, The American Horror Story will tear through tales by these talented authors. And just to give you an example, there's Kandara Blake, Marie Lu, Jay Kristoff, Carrie Ryan, Megan Shepherd, Cormac Templeman. Honestly, the list is brilliant. Yeah. And they are great stories. I enjoyed listening to them going, ooh, 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 what's this based on? What's this? This has got to be Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. That one was so great.
Yes. And it was, that one, that is definitely psycho. And yeah, there's just, I found it fun trying to piece together what they were based on. So thank you very much for that recommendation. It was a highlight of my September reads. It really was.
Good. I'm glad. Can I tell you how I found it?
Yeah.
I was searching for books to recommend after reading this story. And that was going to be the one that I was going to recommend. Because I found it on a list that said, if you liked Horror Store, read this.
Wow.
So you burgled my book. But that's where I found it. There was several others on that list. And I read it, and I loved it. And I'm going to tell everyone right now that I started with Kandara Blake, and I do not regret that decision. I love Kandara Blake. But that was the last story in the book, and that's where I started.
That was an absolutely amazing story. Yeah. She is a fantastic storyteller.
She really is. And then I went to Jay Kristoff, because I also like Jay.
Jay Kristoff's was very well done. There was two possible twists, and I was waiting to see which one it was going to be. and I wasn't disappointed.
Yeah. I pegged it. I knew what was going to happen in both of the twisty parts that there could have been, but I was pleased that it happened and it was done very well. Short stories, go and read them.
You know how much I do love an anthology as well, because it means once you find a story that's really good, it might be a new author, and that's that opens doors. That's great.
Okay, what about you? So, since you burgled my book that I wanted to talk about, I've got to do something else. And luckily, I looked at our show notes this morning and saw that you burgled my book. So I was able to quickly come up with something else. And I'm glad that I did, because I found something new that I enjoy. But it's going to be a little bit different, because I'm not suggesting a book. I am suggesting that you listen to Grady Hendrix's podcast called Super Scary Haunted Homeschool. It's about vampires. Shocking. And it just started in May. His newest book is about vampires. So obviously he's done a lot of vampire research. But
I do want to read his new book, actually. It's on my...
Mine too. But yeah, Super Scary Haunted Homeschool is very great.
So the let me get this straight. I've burgled yours, and you burgle what I do and recommend podcasts and other things. I think it's fair.
This also should be shocking to people. I don't listen to podcasts because I spend so much time working on this one and editing this one. But I actually did listen to a couple of episodes this morning, because they're not very long. They're not as long as ours. Ours that is currently going 2.5 hours per episode, if not more.
We're still doing the one for the Night Circus, to be fair.
Yeah, we really are.
That's being released. No, we're still doing it.
It's hard to say. At least we're finally done with The Diviners, and it's done and edited and out in the world for everyone to experience.
Oh, best.
Yeah, it took an entire season to do that one. But yeah, they're pretty brief episodes. He does a lot of voices. There's a lot of sound effects, a lot of ridiculousness. But you can actually learn stuff about vampires. The first one immediately...
Do you know what I like about this recommendation as well?
What?
It seems to fit in with the theme of the month for the book club.
Yeah, it's creepy. The very first episode started out talking about vampire penises.
Of course.
And it made me laugh quite a bit. So go and give that a listen. I mean, not that I want you to stop listening to our podcast, but go and listen to his podcast too, afterward.
In addition to.
Yeah.
And tell him Fictional Hangover sent you.
Yes. Please do. So also, I want to recommend something else that is also different. And, you know, it really doesn't have much to do with anything that we've talked about so far today.
As long as it doesn't have snot and people in walls, have at it.
Yeah, so it doesn't have to do with any of those things.
Thank goodness.
But it does have to do slightly tangentially with our podcast. Liz Emerson, the musician behind our adorable jingle, has just put out an album. It's called Die Kinder, and you can find it pretty much wherever you download music. But you should go and check it out and support her, because you know what? She did our jingle for free. And that's pretty amazing. So go and check that out. Go check out Liz Emerson. Find her. iTunes.
Facebook.
Patreon.
Google. L-Y-S-S. Emerson.
Yeah. Find her. Check it out.
Yes. Congratulations, Liz Emerson, on your release.
Yeah, good job. Yay, we're proud of you. Okay, now. That's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. The first episode of season 3. I'm Amanda.
I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss The Monstromologist by Rick Yancey, audiobook narrated by Steve Boyer. Look out for the Would You Rather poll to go along with that book on social media. Don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook. Be sure to visit our shop on Redbubble at fictionalhangover.redbubble.com for all your favorite fictional hangover-themed merchandise. And now, become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover or support us on Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. If you'd like this episode, check out our others and rate, review and subscribe so you don't miss out. And finally, special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.